Well, friends, this week I am skipping the recap and the preview because today's story is good enough all on its own. On a list of the top 10 most Googled Bible stories, three of them can be found in the Old Testament: Noah's Ark, the Exodus, and today's story of David and Goliath. So this morning, we're going to read all of it, the entire chapter. It is loaded with amazing characters, like our 10-foot giant and our shepherd boy with a sling. But this story is also loaded with meaning. This story has something to say. And so I invite you to join me in this moment as we read together 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socho in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Socho and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with a valley between them. Now, to many a modern reader, this first paragraph doesn't mean a whole lot. It's essentially setting the geopolitical scene for this most famous of battles. For the sake of this morning, all I want you to take from it is an image. An image of the Israelite army on one hillside, the Philistine army on another hillside, a valley in between them, and they are so close they can see each other. They can hear each other. They're lined up and ready to go. Let's keep reading. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs were bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Now things are getting a little exciting. So we get introduced to the Philistine champion, a giant named Goliath. Now, a cubit is approximately 18 inches and a span, about half of that. So Goliath was a 9-foot-9-inch monster. In comparison, who's the tallest person in this room right now? Do we have anyone who's 6'4"? Anyone who's 6'5"? The Camerons skipped church today. All right, so Chris and I, we're the tallest people here. And Goliath has us by 3.5 feet. Does anyone know who is the tallest human being in modern history? It's actually a really good piece of Illinois trivia. All right, so the tallest known person on record was Robert Wadlow, who is also known as the Illinois Giant. Wadlow from Alton, Illinois, was 8'11" and had a nearly 10-foot wingspan. Goliath even has the Illinois Giant by nearly a foot. And he's also crazy strong. His bronze armor weighed 150 pounds. The tip of his spear weighed 15 pounds. And the point of all these bronze details is that the guy is absolutely jacked and he's armed to the teeth. Goliath is the most intimidating specimen of a human being ever, and he knows it. Let's keep reading. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we'll become your subjects. But if I overcome and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." So Goliath's calling out the entire Israelite army. He knows he's the biggest guy out there, so it's a pretty safe bet to challenge them to a one-on-one, hand-to-hand fight to the death. It's like an isolation offense. You throw the big guy the ball and get the rest of the team out of the way. Except for in this case, it'd be like running an isolation offense for Shaq, and he's posting up a freshman. Right, so you see how this is going to play out. Back to the text. Then Goliath, the Philistine, said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. And that's the end of scene one. The Israelite army is on one side of a valley. The Philistine army is on the other side. Standing between them is a gigantic killing machine of a soldier who's shouting threats. And even the tall and ridiculously good-looking King Saul is freaking out. And now it's like an intentional juxtaposition. We're introduced to the second main character of today's story, David. Let's keep reading. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. And we're going to pause for a second again to place David in the context of the larger overall story. My man Trent already knew where we were going with this. For those of you who are with us in the spring, you'll remember the story of Ruth. Right, Ruth was a foreigner, a widow, the daughter-in-law of Naomi, and by the end of the book, her luck turns. She marries a man named Boaz. And bonus points, does anybody remember the name of their son? Obed. Ruth and Boaz have a son named Obed, and Obed has a son named Jesse. All right, let's read it again. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time, he was already very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. All right, we've met the giant Goliath. Now we've met David, the youngest of 8 brothers who spends his days chasing sheep. Ready for the fun part? Cut to the next scene. For 40 days, Goliath, the Philistine, came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand. And we pause again, because in Bible world, 40 days is code language for hardship and suffering that feels like it's lasting forever. Noah was stuck on the ark for 40 days and 40 nights. Moses goes without food for 40 days and 40 nights. Jesus is tempted in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. And for 40 days, Goliath the Philistine came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand, and it felt like forever. And the point is that some hardships and challenges and sources of fear and worry, they stick around for a while. I wonder, do any of you know what 40 days and 40 nights feels like? Do you know what it's like to have a hardship in your life that just won't go away? It was hard enough on its own, but what makes it truly unbearable is that it pokes its head every morning and every evening for what feels like forever. The Israelite army is getting worn out. They've been afraid for 40 days and 40 nights, and we keep reading. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commanders of their units. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. Now, if you were with us last week, you'll remember that David was recently anointed to be the next king of Israel by the prophet Samuel. And they're kind of keeping it under wraps so that Saul doesn't try to have him killed. But everyone who is there knows what happened. Right? David's dad knows that he's the anointed one. David's brothers know that he's the anointed one. David certainly knows that he is God's anointed, and yet his dad sends him to deliver a charcuterie board to the real soldiers. Now, David has a choice. He can remain humble and listen to his dad's request, or he can let pride get the best of him. Right? What do I look like? Uber Eats? Right? Deliver your own cheese, old man. But as you might expect, David takes the humble route and does what his father asks. And it's a good reminder, because how often does our pride keep us at home? How often does thinking higher of ourselves than we should keep us from experiencing the thing that God might have in store for us? Come on, you don't actually expect me to do that. You know how valuable my time is? Can't you do it? Can't we get one of the youth to do it? Can't anyone other than me do it? If David had been a prideful punk and stayed home, we wouldn't be reading this story 4,000 years later, and who knows what would have happened in the Valley of Elah. We keep reading. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp, and as an army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry, Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As they were talking with them, as he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his line and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw this man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He'll also give his daughter in marriage and will exempt the whole family from taxes in Israel." David asked the man standing near him, "What? What will be given? What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking to the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are, how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." All right, you get what's happening here? David's big brother, Eliab, the tall, good-looking one that the prophet Samuel skipped over in choosing his little brother. Well, that big brother's trying to pick a fight. And I want to zero in on this interaction for just a second and see if we can't humanize Eliab. Because not only was Eliab skipped over in favor of his little brother, he's also been sitting in a place of fear and shame for the last 40 days and 40 nights. As the oldest of Jesse's sons, he's supposed to be filled with courage and strength, but instead, like all the other Israelite soldiers, he's been hiding in his tent, trying to drown out the giant's threats and mockery. Now, none of that justifies his attack on David or David's character, but it does help explain it a little. Have you ever noticed how it's almost always the most insecure who are constantly picking fights? Especially if they can tell that you are thriving, expanding, right? Growing beyond them. When you start living into your best self and the vision that God has for you, you might draw some criticism from people who are not. And so when you find yourself confronted with someone who is angry or mean or critical of you, friends, it tells you a whole lot more about them than it does about you. And so once again, David has a choice to make. He can let pride get the best of him and jump into the fire with his big brother, or he can lean into that humble heart that we've already started to get to know. And we all know how this story ends up. David ends up in a fight, but it's not with his big brother. It's with Goliath. And again, I wonder how often you end up missing out on the real thing because you get sucked into every little fight along the way. You feel that one? Each and every one of you, each and every one of us has something big to offer the world, but you'll likely never get to it if you allow every critical voice, right, every loud mouth to distract you, discourage you, make unsolicited withdrawals from your emotional storehouse. You know what I'm saying? Married folks, don't raise your hands or anything, but how often do you find yourself picking a fight with your spouse when the battle's really with something else, someone else? Don't look at each other either. All right, let's jump back in the story for a bit. When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave the few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away, and to someone else brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. Now, what David said, when he earlier said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God?" Well, that was overheard and reported to Saul. And Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against the Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he's been a warrior since his youth." Have you ever been told you're not enough? Not enough to do that thing or be that person? Maybe it's someone saying it to your face. Maybe it's the inner chatter. If you know it, you know that David has another decision to make, which voice he's going to listen to. And David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord will rescue me from the Lord who rescued me from the paws of the lion and the paws of the bear will rescue me from the hands of the Philistines." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." So Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over his tunic and tried walking around because he wasn't used to them. "I can't go in these," he said to Saul, "because I'm not used to them." So he took them off. Can you picture that little interaction? They've got David dressed up like a mini Goliath. He's covered from head to toe in bronze armor, and the little shepherd boy can't even walk in it. It's funny how we do that, right? How we often have an image of what success or health or wholeness or victory looks like, when in reality, there's no one size fits all. David is not a Goliath. David is a David. And this story would have turned out totally different if David tried to be something other than himself. Once again, I ask, can you hear that and feel that? Someone tells you what the path of happiness looks like or what the only way to get ahead looks like. You got to be tougher. You got to be more selfish if you don't want people to walk all over you. You got to be less sensitive. And if you want to get anywhere in this world, I don't know. I say, you be you, donkey. The world has a whole lot of them, but only has one of you. I can't go in these, David said to Saul, because I'm not used to them, so he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with a stick?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animal." And David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with a sword and spear and javelin? I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine armies to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know there's a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by the sword or the spear that the Lord saves, for this battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Now, if you can look past all the violent language in that, you'll notice that David remembers his why. All right, David is not risking his life for the princess and some tax breaks. He's in this battle because a giant is mocking God, and that's a fight that David's not willing to back down from. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly to the battle lines to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the head. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face first on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from its sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero is dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistine, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. As Saul watched David go out to meet the Philistines, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as I live, your majesty, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." So as soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So what giants are you facing right now? We all know that if you're not staring down a giant, it's because you probably just got past one, or because you're probably about to face one anytime soon. We also know that in a room this size, there's most definitely people who are deep into their 40 days and 40 nights. So I wonder who has a giant of a situation coming to mind, who knows of a Goliath in their own life. I don't want to like trivialize anything or make it seem easy to overcome life's hardest challenges, but I also want to remind you that 40 days and 40 nights may feel like forever, but it does eventually end. In this particular story, among many things, we're reminded to not let pride keep us home, keep us from entering the battle with our giant. In this particular story, we're reminded to humanize our critics, remembering that they're likely facing a giant of their own. And yet, and this is a big yet, just because we understand our critics doesn't mean they're right. Doesn't mean we have to shoulder their pain or insecurities. Friends, in this particular story, we're reminded to remain true to ourselves. Don't armor up like a soldier if you're more of a shepherd. Trust yourself. Lean into yourself. You were created supremely good, and thanks be to God for that. And then finally, in this particular story, we're reminded to remember our why. All of life's greatest giants, they shrink down to size when we can remember for what and for who we're fighting. Friends, this is the story of David and Goliath. I wish I had a month I could have spent on this one. There are so many sermons in here, but there's also so much more in this living word and the still speaking God for us to explore together.